Welcome in, everybody. It is Inside the Gamecock, the show. We are live from the mountains to the sea in the great state of South Carolina, coast to coast, nationwide, and worldwide via the Chief Sports Network app. I am Phil Mad Dog Mullinax, cutting through the orange fog of the upstate of South Carolina. As always, J.C. Sherbert, my co-host. And it's Friday, so that means we have none other than the late night Gamecock himself, Matt Anderson, in with us. Gentlemen, good afternoon. Good to see you on a nice Friday here.
Yeah, Phil. Almost the weekend. Normally I have Fry-yay underneath my name here, but I'm heavily promoting the late night Gamecock show at 7 o'clock. We are having a blast and want everybody to join us this Sunday at 7 p.m.
Yeah, man. Good stuff with Jamie Shaw looking at transfer class and all of that over this last Sunday. So, yeah, if you missed it, it is on the Inside the Gamecocks YouTube page. Cut up. Yeah, it's about, what, 15, 18?
Yeah, actually, he gave us, we initially only asked for 20, and he gave us about 30. And I think it's always great to have an outside perspective on South Carolina, because we definitely talked the portal class. We talked Marcus Johnson, but we also talked about the changing landscape of college basketball, how South Carolina fits into it. And for those that don't know, Jamie is actually from South Carolina. So he has his finger on the pulse of Gamecock basketball for sure.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
All right. Sorry about that. I had to put something up. Yeah.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
Priorities. Okay.
I was trying to, I don't know, having a bit of writer's block.
Yeah. Well, that'll do it.
I was trying to write something last night, and it was angry. It was mad. It just kept coming out mad. It wasn't funny. It was just angry. And I'm like, this is not just, you know what? It's like,
this isn't me. It's not me.
It happens to everybody, man. It's just one of those things. But anyway, hope everybody's doing well today. This is the show portion of Inside the Gamecocks, the show. Bobby's on his way to Spartanburg.
Hope he gets a cheeseburger.
Tries out 3.5 hours. Yeah, the cheeseburger day yesterday calls me and the stepson to get cheeseburgers for lunch. So it was crazy. Again, happy birthday to Blake, whose birthday is 30 years old. That's good. Well, I turned 30. I thought I was old. Little did I know. But that's the day they killed Harambe. And we talked about yesterday how it was, crazy. Justin talks about, Justin Hall in the chat box, McKellar Enterprise chat box, talks about the crosstalk hours. One of the best.
Yeah.
I like it. Ed says something good about the Big Spur, where you can join for $1. Says, you guys, JC, crushing it on TBS. I appreciate that, Ed.
Hey, man.
I'm sure you've seen more articles from me than you had at the old place.
Yeah.
There's a reason for that, but glad to be back in the writing game. And Matt's done a fantastic job on all the analytical breakdowns and stuff. It's just good. I think that nowadays there's just so much replication out there that, you know, we try to make it interesting.
Yeah, and for me, like, I want people to understand the statistics and say, like, my goal is for someone not to need me to explain statistics. Like, hey, look, this is what's happening, and I can talk about it and talk to my friends and say, look, you know, look at this catch rate, this target share, and all of those different things. And it's been a lot of fun to break it down, you know, from an analytics standpoint and just raw data. This is just what the numbers say. Now it's up to South Carolina to replicate what Kendall Browse has done other places.
Yeah, definitely. And that's what the article kind of digs into is, and I think you put out an interesting point about the target share, which is something I've never even looked into. Like 20-something% of the targets were going to guys that were not productive And that's interesting. And that kind of shows you more some systemic issues. Like when we talk about it's important in any offense, I think, for the ball to get in the hands of the right guys. That's, you know, you got to design that, you know, where offensive coordinators, I think, mess up is when it's more about plays than players. Well, we're going to run this play right here. Instead of saying, well, what play do I have to get the ball to this guy? Cause he can make things happen. And I'm not saying I don't really know what Mike Shula was thinking with that. But I know the guy two times before him, Satterfield was all about plays and not players. That's why you'd see like Juice Wells not get any targets the week after he had nine catches for 180 yards against Arkansas. You know, so that's that. And it's kind of funny because you talk about people talk about the NFL and all that. The NFL is designed to get their top players the ball. Don't get me wrong. That's why you have fantasy football and things like that. So I don't understand that at all. The next guy, Dowell, actually, I thought did a pretty good job of that. I think his issues with receivers was you really had some unfortunate – some guys with nagging injuries like Gage Larvadan and Delvon Campbell who were supposed to help that, you know, ended up being pretty good. But they were out of the lineup, and so you had to depend on Mazio and as a true freshman and some guys like that. And then last year it's just kind of a mystery, but that is telling that a lot of those targets – Matt ended up being for guys that just that don't produce. And I think that's a big key this year is to get it in the hands of the guys that can.
Yeah. And JC, when you think about it, like there's nothing wrong with having, you know, five players make up only 20% of the offense. But at the same time, when you've looked at what Kendall Bryles has done other places, those players that are getting 20%, you know, not the lion's share of care of targets, they're still producing 7 yards a target, not 7 yards a catch, 7 yards a target. That's why I think yards per target is a better metric than yards per catch because it shows when this guy's on the field, what's happening. I mean, I could go even deeper, JC, and go into yards per route run and really slice this thing up. Yeah. And, you know, you see in snap share, all of that. But I mean, you look at the biggest issue here, you know, you just had low catch rates. If Lenoris was throwing the ball, it was so deep that when Nick Harbor went from like a 60% pass catching rate to 57, and his yards per target went up to 11.9. So, like when you're making ill advised throws down the field, you're not even giving your wide receivers an opportunity. And you look what he did with Rocket Sanders at Arkansas. Like Matt Fuller can step into that. Matt Fuller caught 75% of his targets last year. 6 of 8. I mean, go ahead, get the ball to the guy that can produce. Jerron Howell, 15.3 yards per target, 100% catch rate. Every time he got the ball that was thrown to him last year, he made something happen with it. So, I mean, you got to find opportunities and ways to do it. And, you know, one stat that I didn't put in the article, JC, that I'll share right now, is you look at Kendall Bryles in his last year at Arkansas, his top two wide receivers combined for over 115 targets. Well, they had a 75% and 63% catch rate. So they're catching the ball when it's thrown to them. It's not just deep shots. It's things that are manageable.
They're catching it from KJ Jefferson, too. Those receivers, man, I think he's got more to work with at receiver this year than he did at Arkansas. It was Landers and then another. I think they both came from Georgia. Hazelden. You know, they were both transfers that were highly rated out of high school. But, you know, and even that year, most Arkansas people tell you, well, they didn't really have a whole lot of great receivers, but those guys had numbers. I mean, they made a lot of the stuff that that maybe we've seen around here the last couple of years. So I think that's really one of Bryles' specialties. And, you know, if you saw the Carolina-Arkansas game in 2022, you know that. You got a heavy dose of Rocket Sanders. You got a heavy dose of KJ Jefferson in the run game, and it just over and over and over. And I think that's the key to a good offense. It's not rocket science, you know, to get the ball. Now, you know, do you have to be creative with it? Yes. Do you have to do some things to where the defense can just say, all right, they're going to give it to that guy the whole time? Yeah, you have to. And that's what tempo does and formations and all that good stuff. McKellar Enterprises chat box rolls on. But yeah, back just to wrap a bow on this, with Matt here about Bryles and kind of I don't see that being a problem. And I think that'll be a noticeable change. I think you'll go to the game, you'll see some guys make plays. And I think you're going to see some guys in this receiving room, Matt, that have more of an opportunity to make plays when they're in. We talked about DJ Black earlier, you know, and Jamie did mention that to fans, sometimes the room, it'll get crowded in their mind because there's so many players that are either already pretty proven and good or that can be very good. Most of the guys in the receiver room, just to be honest, can be pretty good. You know, can be. Everybody's hoping Nick Harbor's a little better this year. And Mazio Bennett bounces back, and Donovan Murph's ready to go, and Jaden Sellers is a little better, although he's very productive. You know, I think what you're going to do is you're going to walk away from a game letting these guys in the receiver room, you know, have the chance to put up better numbers. Whereas sometimes you're just like, a guy in previous years, a guy will have a great game, right? Like I'll use Jacobs as an example last year. Mm-hmm. Have a game where he lights it up, maybe two, and then he goes two games without catching the ball. Now, when Beamer talks about that and Furry talks about that as, well, hey, sometimes you won't get the ball. That just happens. That's true. But what's frustrating when you're looking at it is when you struggle on offense and you have a guy that's clearly capable, that's proven, and he's not getting the ball, and this is, well, that's just how it works out. Beamer never said that after the game. He never used that as an excuse. But it does make you wonder systemically what was going on and why, you know, they weren't trying to get some of their guys that had actually done things in games the ball. I mean, working on some games, they just elected to run it more, I guess. But that, I think that's a very important point, that the philosophy, the general philosophy of Kendall Briles and most good offensive coordinators at the college level is get the ball to your playmakers. Yeah, that's one thing Steve Spurrier was elite at. And you would think he would be a plays, not players guy, but he wasn't. You know, he was a guy like, throw that little thing out to Sydney. All right, let's go. All right, good. Let's go. All right, well, this one's, you got to throw a little crossing pattern to Andy Boyd. All right, let's go.
Well, I think part of that problem too, JC, at least the last 3 years, is you've had, you know, you're going into your third offensive coordinator in 3 years. So identifying the talent early and adjusting and saying, look, everyone's getting an opportunity, earn it. And then once you produce, like, Kendall Briles has shown, he's just going to continue to pepper that person. He's going to put him in positions to succeed. So I'm optimistic. I mean, you talk about some of these guys that are transferring in. Nitro Tuggle had a 19% target share, so he earned targets at Purdue. DJ Black had a 10% target share at UCF. He earned targets. And you talk about those other guys in the room. I mean, pretty much all of them are four-star prospects. Now, we all know the four-star prospects don't always pan out. Neither do five-star prospects. But – you know, there's at least ability in the room that someone needs to pull it out of, and we'll see if it happens.
And they're all fast. I mean, you know, Jackson Rapp, Stone Fury, Charlie Mullaly, Sequel Patterson are guys. I mean, I talked to a guy too the other day that's really high on Sequel. He said what Sequel does is he's just such a plus athlete. He said, and this guy was really talking up the Gamecock receiving room. He talked about DJ Black as well. And he watched Sequel play in high school. And he said, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he got on the field. And I was like, well, really? All the play. He's like, it doesn't matter. He's that electric. And I asked him, because there was some talk about, you know, amongst the recruiting folks, if he may be a better corner or a receiver. Mm-hmm. And this guy, I trust his opinion on football. There's a handful of people that I really, really trusted. This is one of them. And he said, JC, he could play anything he wanted, but he's like, you really want to get the ball in his hands. He's like, you really want to get the ball in his hands. And so look, there's a guy that is coming in early. He's still young. We all know that. He's supposed to be class of 2027. He was ranked 10th in the country overall. We may have forgotten about him because he committed last year and he's not an early enroll guy. But he gets just as good of a shot as anybody, you know, and he comes in and learns it. And you may sit here and go at the end of this year, we may all sit here and talk about Sequel Patterson and DJ Black like big time, you know. And I'm not predicting that. I'm just saying that's, you know, DJ, of course, more than Sequel, because Sequel just got there. But based on that intel, man, you know, it's hard. I honest to God, guys, I almost want to quit talking about the receivers. Cause like I said earlier, you could literally say something great about all of them. And it sounds like this indestructible force of a room that nobody will be able to stop, and they'll score 90 points a game. And that's just not going to happen. There's going to be some separation. There always is. But, man, just the raw ability and the potential and all that, that it's good stuff, man. It's good stuff. And we could literally talk about all of them all day. And almost
the last thing I would say on it, JC, is, you know, I heard you mention Jaden Sellers earlier. He was a throw-in for Lenoris. I mean, you know why Jaden Sellers played last year? Because he caught 73% of the passes that were thrown his way and averaged 9 yards a target.
So, very productive. Yeah. No, I mean, it was somebody on X a few weeks ago, and, you know, I accurately reported Sellers was the best receiver in the scrimmage. He wasn't just about all the scrimmages, okay? And it was just some people just make these ridiculous leaps on things. It's the height of dishonesty to take two true things and merge them together like Plato and try to make the, and, you know, this is one in this type of thing. 1 + 1 doesn't always equal 2. Yes. Jaden Sellers is Lenoris's brother. Yes. I believe last year, Lenoris Sellers was so uncomfortable that his comfort level with his brother provided him with some trust and he delivered the ball to him. Right. I think that's true. What's not true is the coaching staff, in an effort to keep Lenoris from transferring, benched Mazio Bennett, who Mazio wasn't playing all that much before Jaden was playing anyway. Mm. Right. They were going to Donovan Murph or whoever else, you know? So, there was some kind of something that has nothing to do with football taking place. That's ridiculous, you know? And so that's what I was talking about that. Puff is his own player. I mean, you know, he's the same kind of guy that Cutter Woods was, that Xavien Currents was, that Julian Walker was from this state, that, you know, gets with his team, gets in the playoffs, and balls out. Same guys. As far as that track record goes, that track record's worked at Carolina, and that's why he's at South Carolina. It's
he had a better season without his brother at South Florence than he did the year before.
People sit there and think, you know, his last name's Sellers, and then I think that caused him never to be evaluated properly, you know, because they had already made up their mind by the time he went to the playoff run or whatever. And so he ended up being lower ranked recruiting-wise. But he's the most productive freshman receiver last year. You know, I mean, he was the most productive receiver on the team in every game he played from Oklahoma on. He didn't play at Ole Miss. He had an injury. So, I mean, and the other part of that is this. I don't care who you are, you know, and Shai Smith and Debo Samuel did it recently. If you have the mental fortitude, like I've talked all the time about Dante Moore in the semifinal game, lazily throwing that pass that got picked. I think it was the first play of the game against Indiana. And everybody's talking about it being the number one pick of the draft. I'm like, anybody that does that, you got a long way to go. I would not. That game made me sick with how Oregon competed. And you know it's the money. You know it is. You know those guys just didn't want any. But that I don't want to get sidetracked here. I talk all the time about that. Well, the other part of that, and maybe I'm being unfair, is first plays of football games, everybody just kind of like wants to get through it. All right, let's fire off the ball and hit somebody and run it up the middle. And, oh, we got a tackle. All right, we're playing football now. You know how that goes. Sometimes teams try to throw it deep first play of the game. There's a reason for that. Sometimes they do that.
Loosen up the deep.
And disaster happens, you know, or sometimes it works. There's a reason they do that. For a kid that's a freshman, I don't care who the opponent is. So people that want to talk about Coastal Carolina, oh, it's just against Coastal Carolina, and you want to diminish that, that's not really the point. I don't care who you're playing. You catch a bubble screen and you house it on the first play of the game and you have the confidence to go do that as a freshman, that's impressive. I don't care who it's against. I don't care who's guarding. Just knowing the way football games start. You know, so that's why I think he's a dog. He's a baller, you know. And if his name was Pup Johnson, that's a good name.
Pup that Johnson. Is a good name. That's a good football name.
You know, everybody be like, we can't lose Pup Johnson. You know, instead you've got at least one person with a gun. I don't think everybody feels that way. And I hope not. I hope not. And if you do, I hope you would change your mind and understand that how ridiculous that is. Well, anyway, all right, so we've talked to good receivers. Phil's got a video to cut now.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, a couple of them there. We're doing pretty good on football.
Length, you know. We'll be back, man. I have not listened to the Jamie Shaw interview yet.
We can talk about it.
Yeah. I'll talk a little about basketball roster. Again, if you missed the report from Kendall Rogers, Steve Sabins of West Virginia, add him to the put him in the top two, replaces Big 12 brother and Dan Fitzgerald in the baseball coaching search, Kevin Snall. Snall, we still believe is the leading candidate. I wonder if this was the quote unquote big time candidate behind the scenes people have been talking about. I don't know the difference between Sabins and Snall. Sabins has been at West Virginia 2 years. Snall has been at Coastal for 2 years. I think Sabins' record was 3 games better this year. I mean, they're both kind of the same guy to me. Both were longtime assistants before being promoted in their current jobs. Steve Sabins has been at West Virginia for 10 years. So the behind-the-scenes chatter on this, with the way it was presented to me and others, would not align. Do I think this guy's a great baseball coach? Absolutely. It's kind of, man, you know, it's kind of the same guy, you know. And I would hope that if someone out there that's in position to have an opinion about this that matters, I would hope someone is not sitting there making the foolish, you know, just kind of looking at it going Coastal versus West Virginia, because that doesn't matter. You got to dig into both these guys and find out which one's the best fit. South Carolina's made mistakes doing that before, you know. But I would be surprised if, quote unquote, you know, big time hire would people were thinking it's Steve Sabins instead of Snall, unless they're just, you know, totally wrongheaded about Coastal. You know, that wouldn't make much sense to me. So, is there still someone out there? Who knows? But that's the word. But Steve Sabins, West Virginia, put him on your hot board. Drop Dan Fitzgerald from Kansas down. Put Sabins up. Big 12 coaches. I was told also over the weekend, Carolina feels like they can hire any coach in the Big 12 and they can't touch the salary. Period. Full stop. That's true. They're broke out there.
They hurt. Broke.
Hurt Linda. Hurt Linda. All right. Yeah, go to D's Wings this weekend, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back, everybody, inside the Gamecocks, the show here. We've got Phil, JC, and Matt Anderson in with you. So we want to kind of turn the page here and look at a little hoops before we get out for the weekend, gentlemen.
Yeah, just curious to see, you know, for our audience here that may have missed it, and you can get the late night Gamecock show. It should be up on podcast. Jamie Shaw from On3 joined, and after talking with Jamie, just kind of reset and get Matt's opinion on the portal class. There's a lot of questions out there. We talked yesterday about basketball recruiting a good bit, Matt, about high school ranks and things like that. Jay Diz has some things to say. We talked about it, but the portal class obviously is very important. I mean, I'm under the impression, and I don't mind saying it, they have to go to the NCAA tournament or there's probably going to be a change. After talking to Shaw, kind of getting the lowdown, what are your thoughts now? If they've changed at all?
Well, first and foremost, I mean, Shaw kind of said the same thing. I don't think he was willing to go out all the way on saying that it's NCAA tournament or bust. I don't think he would do that for any coach. But he heavily insinuated that with the changing landscape in college basketball, with the 5-for-5 coming down the road, the European stuff that's potentially coming down the road, and then just the fact that 76 teams are going to be in the NCAA tournament going forward every year, and the expectation for coaches is to make it. So I think that you might just have a situation where landscape's changing. You haven't been able to do it so far. Well, what are we going to hold on to you for? But I think he was optimistic about the lineup. The one thing that he kept going back to was that Lamont Parrish's offense is built around paint touches. And we've talked about that, JC, on this show, the late night show with Jamie Bradford and my game previews, all of that. This offense needs to get in the paint to get the ball moving around the horn to get open shots. And, you know, Jamie Shaw seems to feel like Lamont Parrish has created a roster that can do that. He talked about Marcus Johnson being able to get downhill and kick the ball around. He talked about, you know, Camden Heidi just pulling defenses out to potentially, you know, 30 feet. Corey Mincy being able to do the exact same thing. And it seems like to me that, you know, Lamont has overcorrected in each of the last 2 years in the portal. And this year it seems that he's kind of found that mix of, okay, we got some athletic bigs that can guard, that can shoot. We've got some, you know, dead eye shooters, well, at least one in Camden Heidi. And then we have some guys that can play defense and are athletic. When you think about a Davion Hanna, when you think about a Shane Blakeney. Now, the biggest question that still remains, and, you know, I think Jamie and I would agree with this, is are these players good enough to do it night in and night out in the SEC? They're clearly talented enough. I mean, the combined, they've played 10 and a half seasons of college basketball. They've shot over 1,000 threes, and they've made 36% of them. So they're proven in that regard. And now it's just, can they do it against SEC opponents? Now, there's going to be the two more international guys that we've talked about. They're both bigs. South Carolina needed to get bigger and more athletic down low. They seem to have done that. Jamie was optimistic about Davion Hanna. And as a guy that can get downhill, can pull up, can shoot, can get to the rim, can make the ball move. And, you know, he kind of centered on paint touches. And I think that kind of aligns with everything. As far as, you know, money goes, you know, Jamie was under the impression that last year's South Carolina roster was around $5 million in NIL.
He's wrong.
And
over six.
Yeah, and I did say, you know, Jamie, what I've heard was around six. And he said, well, that could be the case. He said, you know, what went around the nation was five. And he said that just wasn't good enough. Well, and he said it wasn't enough for an SEC program. He said that he thinks the Gamecocks have at least doubled it, if not more, on NIL, which is the same thing that we've reported here. And he said that he thinks South Carolina is in line with the majority of the SEC on spending. Then, you know, the question beckons, okay, they're in line with overall roster spend. Did they spend the money effectively? Did the money go to the right people? Were they able to get the right people? And he point blank said that, you know, Lamont Paris missed on some high level transfers that he was in the game with, and it wasn't a money issue that they missed. It was a perceived ability to win at South Carolina. So all those things are hovering over the South Carolina Gamecock basketball program right now and Lamont Paris.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, too. You know, in my conversations with some people that have spoken with Lamont Paris, he's very almost apologetic. He's not a guy that's sitting there making excuses about the roster last year. Two things could be true at once. You could need more money to go accomplish things, you know, in the portal. But you can also take ownership of saying it should be better. Here's the thing that I keep getting back to. It's not, you know, okay, so you don't want to fire him because he didn't have a lot of money. That's fine. The money they did spend on some of those players was insane. Like, you know, and maybe that's just basketball. But some of those guys, I'd be surprised if they got a nickel at their new place. I mean, they all had to take a pay cut. And they played like it, too. They played like they were just getting paid. Many times, some of them, not all of them. That's A. So you look at Oklahoma. I keep using this as an example. Oklahoma didn't make the tournament. They would have at 76. They advanced deep into the – I think they're a pretty good basketball team. They had a chance, right? South Carolina never had a chance. I could care less that they beat Oklahoma at home on a day where Oklahoma's only three players were even playing. And Ole Miss was a disinterested basketball team when they beat them. I'm not taking it away from Meechie Johnson or any of those wins. Great for them, right? Great for the kids and the players. But that basketball team this past year would get beat by 25 points by the team the year before. I mean, they just weren't even close. And you knew it. You knew it when teams like Northwestern and Butler, which ended up being what 500 or worse teams, right, look just so much better than the Gamecocks when they played in that ballroom
in West Virginia.
And this was a team that was going to have to shoot, but they couldn't shoot. How weird was that? So you hope that it gets better. And the thing about it was this. South Carolina's NIL spend last year, because I want to be fair to the folks that gave money for that to happen or that put business deals together for that to happen. You know, when you don't have the right number, and this is one of the reasons I get fired up about it, overall, you know, you make it look like there's something systemically wrong with the people that work every day to maximize these dollars for the programs. And so the blame gets cast in other ways that it shouldn't. The $5 million number came from an Oklahoma fan site.
Oh, wow.
trying to get Porter Moser more money, you know, so he wouldn't get fired, and just took $1.2 million off of South Carolina's number. It's for the hell of it, you know? And so, and that, now you got the football people, this charlatan, you know, algorithm thing they're doing where they value all these guys, and it's nothing like the On3 valuation, which is realistic. They had Vandrevious Jacobs getting $900,000 at Miami. Man, Miami will spend. They're not spending that much on Vandrevious Jacobs. I can assure you. Take several hundred thousand dollars off of that. Give it to Malachi Toney, who was at like 1.2, and you maybe will have something right. Give it to their linemen that they go by. Yeah, at Miami. But, you know, so the numbers are important. You can't always give the player numbers, but, you know, but as far as this year goes, you know, that number is probably closer to 14, 15, which is insane, but that's kind of what everybody else is doing. So, you know, you just hope that, you know, and I'm still under the impression there was a lot more to be fixed than just the budget.
Yeah.
I'll stand by that. But if that's what helps get them back to the tournament, I think that's what we all want.
Well, and I think one of the things too, JC, and I don't want to put words into Jamie's mouth, but we kind of alluded to this, whether it's Lamont Paris next season or not, you have to show the next coach that you've dedicated resources and that you're willing to do it. You have the money. They're not coming into a situation like a $5, $6 million budget. I mean, I go back to when Chris Beard got hired at Ole Miss, like in his contract at that time. You go back, what, 4 years, 5 years?
Yeah,
it was $3-4 million. I need $6 million for NIL to take this job. And if you think about just in the short amount of time, how that's ballooned, it's insane. I mean, Mississippi State last year was an $8 million ball club. And, you know, they had to go find more money, and they have. It's the world we live in right now. Until it gets fixed, it's just going to keep ballooning. And
I talked about that on basketball special yesterday.
Well, I'm of the mindset, like, if you're going to do it, just don't pump it into basketball right now. Like, pump it into something else that has more success, a higher success rate. Or
I think some schools should do that. I mean, really, yeah. I mean, you're going to play the margins, you know, and you're going to make money off of it anyway, because the TV contracts. Run it like a business. All these people want it to be run like a business, a real business. Until there's consequences for the players, you know, let's run it like a business. Okay. Well, we're downsizing, you know, we'll do this anyway. But I don't want to go on. I got some things in the chat box we have to get to.
Yeah.
All right. So Hagler fixed his. So yeah, you're good. He had to close and reopen YouTube. Ethan says, I have a gut feeling it's not going to be Schnall. Saban sounds about right. Okay. And I see some comments for like that. Ed says Saban's would be a huge letdown. We know how the obvious hires go around here. Okay, so I'm going to tell you. So look, I'm not advocating. I mean, if it were me, I'd want Kevin Schnall because I'm more familiar with it, right? There's no difference between Steve Saban's and Kevin Schnall, really, when you look at their resumes. They're both Schnall is at a place that's won more historically in baseball, but it's still, you take a Sun Belt team to the finals of the College World Series, you know, outside of like Fresno State making it, winning it all a few years back, that's hard. I mean, the schools that are the mid majors that win, that go to the thing and win it all, they're like Fresno every now and then. Cal State Fullerton was like that for a while, but that's still not easy to do in baseball. So I would give Schnall the edge just based on that. That's one season. But Steve Sabins was a longtime assistant to Gamecock heel Randy Mazey, who used to be at East Carolina a long time ago, Clemson guy. And then he took over just like Schnall. Well, West Virginia is in the Big 12. You know, they're far north. They have to go and travel to Arizona and all the way across the country. I mean, they're an outpost in this league, So he won the thing last year, first place, just like Dan Fitzgerald. And then it made the super regional. And then this year, they're going to the regional again. I think they're hosting. They won the Clemson regional last year. They beat Kentucky and then promptly got slaughtered by LSU and Baton Rouge. But I mean, this guy's a hell of a coach, and longevity wise, same number of years as Schnall. I'm not advocating for either one of them, but I think that we all kind of gravitate towards Schnall because we're familiar with Coastal. And we know that's impressive, you know, and so it's even more impressive for us. I think there's some people around Carolina that, you know, I hope don't have really a say in it, that actually believe that somehow what Kevin Schnall is doing at Coastal is less than maybe a coach that's at a place that they're more familiar with, like West, or that they think is a bigger name, like West Virginia. I think they're both equally, they're both impressive coaches. So I just want to say that, but obviously a lot of folks have their favorites for the job. I mean, there's some people on the bigspur.com Gamecock Central right now that they're disappointed. It could be Schnall, you know, they wanted somebody else. They you know, and so I get it. So please continue to have your favorites. I'm just saying, I don't know that in the grand scheme of things that there's some back, that this is some backup plan. That the guys I worry about with backup plans, I'll say, is, are the guys with resumes like Mark Kingston, or like, I hate to say it, Lamont Paris, or Darren Horn, when they're at mid-majors and it's like, yes, they've had some good years, but it's been inconsistent, or they've had a lot of bad and then one good. Sometimes that's a slow build, guys. Sometimes that means, you know. And so that's the deal there. McJunkin asked, he joined On3 for a dollar. Is that the Big Spur? Same article, same people. Yeah, On3 is the national network. You have the Big Spur, Gamecock Central. I actually saw your email today on my list. It said McJunkin something. I was like, I wonder if that's Paul.
That's right. So
Harrison says he thinks it's Schnall. Gabby says she's already caught herself in the hope that the basketball team's better. And X says, worries the $12 million won't be enough because everyone else is ballooned as well. Well, it's bigger than 12X. It's about 15, 16.
Nuts.
Yeah, one of the things I'll say about the baseball coaching search when it comes to Sabins and Schnall is it's very similar to the longer you stay in school before you become a professional athlete, whether it's football, basketball, baseball. The longer you know the name, the more time you have to pick out warts. And, you know, there's an impatient factor as well, where I want it now. I want to know who the coach is now. Until I get it, I'm going to research more. And I mean, at the end of the day, you just have to hope that the search committee, the athletic director, knows more than we do, because they do. Like, I mean, you want me to go analyze college baseball coaches? Nah, I'm going to pass that to JB. Like, he knows that. And whatever he says, I'm going to go with. In a lot of areas, same way he'd probably go with that me for basketball. But yeah, I mean, it's like what did Bane say? Batman, like, the longer you're alive, the more you become the villain or something like that.
Yeah, I guess that's it. But we'll see. Lance, got to give, we'll end with this, Phil. Latte Lance says, what's up, killers? Had to hop on late because getting ready to go back to old El Paso.
Well, thank you for your service, man.
And last mission before retirement, hopefully getting some cerveza. Welcome to Juarez. Remember that, whatever that movie's called. It's like Sicario. Is it what's called? Oh, gosh. Anyway. Yeah,
hopefully it is your last one.
Hopefully last one, bro.
Get out now.
Hopefully. Yeah. All right, Matt. Yep. Appreciate you this week, buddy.
Absolutely.
check out Matt's writing. Join thebigspur.com, GamecockCentral.com for a dollar. Many of you have, like Paul McJunkin. Check that out. Be sure to subscribe on the podcast end of things to the Late Night Gamecock Show, to this one. Rate us 5 stars. We always appreciate that. Four Quarter Friday will be out on podcast form later today. South Carolina High School Sports with Rob and Matt. They also have a podcast. I encourage everyone to go hit the subscribe button with that. That helps us stay on the air and make money. Anyway, appreciate all of you in the McKellar Enterprises chat box, in here for Free For All Friday and Wide Open Wednesday. All that good stuff. We'll be back Monday for Matt Anderson, the Mad Dog, Phil Mullinax, for Jamie Bradford, for Monty Lee, who had a hell of a preview of the NCAA tournament earlier today on our airwaves. See, we always got something new for you. You all have a great weekend. JC Sherbert signing off for the week. Holla.